Parshat Tetzaveh, otherwise known as Parshas Tetzaveh. Okay? First of all, we're going to dedicate this Parsha to a few people. First of all, tonight's Parsha and Cholent, very important, at Yeshivat HaRite is dedicated by Paul Generowitz in memory of Leib Generowitz, who was his grandfather. He is the great-grandfather of Mark Generowitz, who was a Talmud here, I think year five, maybe year six, dentist now, fantastic guy. And the great-great-grandfather of little Leib Zalman Generowitz. He's a writer grandchild, right? So, should be Lilui Nishmato. And I also, I've been thinking about Daniel Ben Shimon, of Perez's son, who is still missing. They know he was wounded. They still have had no word from him. I cannot begin to imagine. He runs an organization. He's all over the world. How do you function with your son, and you don't know where he is? We should continue to dive in for him. He should be safe. He should come home soon, Bezrat Hashem, all along with all the hostages. And lastly, I want to mention Hananya Yosef Ben Tova. Hananya Yosef Ben Tova was in a car. I mentioned him earlier today, and he realized that there was a terrorist shooting this morning near Malei Adumim, and he basically jumped out of the car. He was a soldier. He was on his way to a job in security. He had a pistol on him. And, he got out of Khan Yunis like 2 weeks ago after months of Miluim. And he was Pashuti Steyer. He charged the terrorist. And he succeeded in neutralizing, which is a nice word for killing the terrorist. He got shot in the stomach and the leg. I understand, Baruch Hashem, he had surgery and he's going to be okay. But okay means now he has to deal with the stomach wound and leg wound. So we should daven for him. And the shiur should be that he should have a refuah shlema along with the other six people who were wounded in today's attack. And of course, the victim who was killed by the terrorists today, that we wish nechama to his family. So, many years ago, at one of the Azkarot, at one of the memorial services for Benji, for my cousin who was killed in the Second Lebanon War that I mentioned earlier, I think it was the 10th anniversary, so they wanted to get a special speaker. You know, they always have a speech. They go to the Beit Kvarot. There's, unfortunately, thousands and thousands of people who have developed a routine on a particular day of the year around the yahrzeit of their son who fell in battle, or on Yom HaZikaron. And every year we go to the Kever, it's in July, and there's a military service. The army always sends someone. I could do the service now by heart. And then we go back to Bayit Shel Benji, which is a lone soldier's home that they built in his memory. And there's somebody gives a lecture or a shiur or whatever it is. I've done it a couple times. And then and then we talk and we're with the family. And so this particular year, they wanted to get some serious, so they got Bugi Yalon to come. Bugi Yalon was an ex-Ramatkal, chief of staff of the Israeli army. He was defense minister. I could talk about him for half an hour. He's a legendary figure and an incredible leader and role model. One of those rare individuals who was at one point very, very left-wing. And after he saw what happened in Oslo, and then the second intifada, he realized that he'd been wrong, and he changed his stripes. He wrote a public letter to the mitnachalim, those who call themselves right-wing, that the left-wing calls settlers and whatever else it might be. And he said, we have to admit when we're wrong. He was wrong, and he has a different perspective now. And he spoke about leadership, and maybe sometime this year we'll have a shiur on leadership, and I'll quote some of what he said, which is pretty powerful. But at one point in the evening, he told a story. He was at the time Machat of Tzalchanim. He was the brigade commander of the paratroopers, and they were up in Lebanon. And there was a roadside bomb, right? Hezbollah pigua. They set off a bomb, injured some people, whatever. It happened to be that he was right in that area. He was really nearby. So of course they went straight to the scene. When he got there, and he had a gashash, the Israeli army relies on trackers, Bedouin trackers, Jews trackers. That's a story in and of itself. These guys are unbelievable. Maybe I'll tell you sometime about a guy named Mabulu. Mamash saved my life. But because he had a tracker with him, and because they were right there, the pigua had happened like literally 2 minutes earlier. So the tracker looked at the footprints, and he said, well, they left on foot, and they're not far. So he had to make a decision. Does he do what you normally do in an Iruah? You close off the area, you call in more kochot, more forces, there could be terrorists that are still in the area, it's dangerous, protect, whatever. Or do you begin a chase? Do you begin a mirdaf? He decided, shikul mefaked bashetach, the commander on scene gets to decide, that they're going to do a mirdaf. So they gather whatever forces they have and they begin to chase these terrorists. And the terrorists realize that they're gaining on them. right? They also went on foot, right? So they hid. And basically, when they got close to the terrorists opened fire on them. And thank God he was wearing a shakbatz, a vest, but he was wounded. He was hit in between the folds of the vest, and he was wounded in the chest. And they had to helicopter him to the hospital. So, because he was in the chod, he was in the front, right? And that's what a leader does. That's, you know, in the Israeli army, they tell you, you know, acharai, that's a motto that's up on the wall in Bad Echad, an officer's course. You know, we don't lead from behind, we lead from the front. Right? You have to motivate your men to follow you. But he was, I mean, he was a brigade commander. Normally, a brigade commander isn't in front of their troops because that's dangerous. You need your brigade commander. So he was in the hospital, and he was being interviewed later that day. They wanted, he was okay, he had surgery, whatever. And somebody asked him, what were you doing in the chod? Why were you in the front of this unit? And he looked at them and he said, well, where else would I be? What is a leader? What is a leader? Now you might think to yourself, this is a funny topic. What does this have to do with Parshas Tetzaveh? We're going to talk about the Mishkan and the menorah and the big day kahuna. So I want to share with you an idea. Okay? I'm going to ask you five questions based on the first pasuk of Tetzaveh. Okay? V'ata Tetzaveh. Who's talking to who? Hashem is talking to Moshe Rabbeinu. V'ata Tetzaveh b'nei Yisrael. I want you to command the Jewish people. Likhu elecha. They should take to you Shemen Zayit Zach. Right? Olive oil that is Zach, that is pure. It's the first drop from each olive. Has no Shmarim, Rashi says. This is the purest of the pure oil. Katit, Lavor. It's going to be for the light. In the Mishkan, in the tabernacle, later in the Beis HaMikdash. Le'alot ner tamid. Right? Because there always has to be a flame lit in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Mishkan. Right? Okay. So, first question. V'yikhu elech Hashem en Zayitzach. What is the obvious question? It will take to you Hashem en Zayitzach. What's the question? Take the oil to you. What? Well, okay, they're going to take the oil from wherever you get oil. They get olives, and they have an olive press, and they make oil. Why does it say what?
For you.
Yeah, why is it taking it to Moshe? Take it to the Beis HaMikdash. Take it to the Mishkan. Or just say, V'yikhu Hashem en Zayitzach. Why say V'yikhu elech? Take it to you. Number one. Number two. What does it not mention? Very interesting. What is this for? All this oil. We're gonna light. What are we gonna light? The menorah. But the menorah is not mentioned here. By the way, it's interesting. Sometimes the value of a new group of students coming every year and you get to learn is that every once in a while somebody asks something or says something that just you realize, huh? Never thought that, like, we get so used to things we forget that. But it's a question. So the Zander Rebbe points out, what is this? So the Ner Tamid. Right? Now, what's a Ner Tamid? So this is not what we're going to talk about, but I'll bring it up because it's mentioned here. Ner Tamid is the eternal flame, right? We have a Ner Tamid here. Okay? When you leave the basement at night, in case you didn't know this, you're supposed to make sure that the Ner Tamid is on. You can turn off the light, but the Ner Tamid is on. And if you have another light on, that's fine. So where was the Ner Tamid in the Mishkan and in the Beis Hamikdash? Pardon? Nope, there was no Ner Tamid. The Ner Tamid is the menorah. The eternal flame is the menorah. There's not a separate candle. We have a Ner Tamid to remember the menorah. And by the way, the Ner Tamid in the Mishkan and the Beis Hamikdash wasn't necessarily a non-stop light that could never go out. It wasn't like passing the torch and the torch should never go out. It meant that there was always, the menorah was always lit. It was lit in the morning, it was lit at night. It would go out in the middle of the night, you lit it again in the morning. If it never went out, how could you light it? They had a mitzvah to light it every day, right? Okay, although there is a Hasidic opinion, which is based on, I don't know what, that whatever, another time. It's Hasidus, right? Okay, so why doesn't it mention the menorah? Also, what is this oil for, right? What does it not say here? It doesn't say, and you shall light the menorah. Pay attention. V'ikhu elech Hashem en Zayitzach. You should take the oil, right, to offer up this flame, right? It's basically talking about lehitivat anirot. It's about preparing the wicks. In fact, it's interesting. Who does this? Kohanim. If a Levi wants to light the menorah, can you light the menorah? Absolutely. Even though we're knowing that a Kohen lights the menorah, right? But a Kohen doesn't have to light the menorah. However, a Kohen has to prepare the wicks. Very interesting. No one else but a Kohen is allowed to prepare the wicks. But a head yod could actually light the menorah. That's why, by the way, there's a menorah here, and the menorah is built, and the menorah is ready. It's an interesting debate. You need a base of mikdash, but you don't need a kohen, right? You could theoretically, that's an interesting discussion, debate, but I'm not going to get into it, right? So why is it all about preparing the wicks? Why don't we talk about the menorah? Menorah is not mentioned, right? And why doesn't it say, listen, we're going to get to Hanukkah again. You all be here because, of course, everybody's staying Shana Bet, right? And what are we going to do, right? We're going to make a bracha. That's all we say here. What do we say? To raise up the candle. Now, on a pshat level, contextually, what this actually meant is that the kohen would come and he had to clean out the schmutz. He had to clean out the schmutz from the menorah. People don't appreciate the schmutz in the menorah. Let me tell you a story to appreciate the schmutz in the menorah. We're going to go to... who here is going to be on seminar? Okay, so the seminar guys, we're going to take a very special siur. If you like Masada, wait till you do the gush with me. We're going to go to the gush. And in the gush, we're going to hear the story of the fall of the gush. A terrible story. 1948, you know. What are Jews... What's a day in Israel without a good massacre story, right? But okay, right? Never. Very difficult story. And the gush fell. And then in 67, the survivors, the children, they came back and they rebuilt the gush. And that's where I live today, Baruch Hashem. Right? Rav Lau lives there, Rav Noam lives there, Rav Judah lives there. Thank God they built the gush, so right, they're going to repay. Okay. About, I don't know, some years after they rebuilt the gush, a fellow showed up in Kfar Etzion. There was a kibbutz member who was actually a cardiologist. And he worked in Hadassah. And he had done an open heart surgery on someone and saved his life. Which in today is a big deal. But you can imagine that 40 years was a very big deal. For a person to survive open heart surgery back then was a huge deal. So he wanted to do something for him to say thank you to him. So he was from a kfar, he was in a village, a local village, not far from Kfar Etzion. Okay? And this was one of the villages that had ransacked Kfar Etzion after the Jordanian Legion took it over. And he wanted to bring them something back. So he brought them a menorah, a Chanukiah. And this Chanukiah, right, a couple of survivors recognized this. This was a Chanukiah, they knew which family it was from. This was a Chanukiah from Kfar Etzion from 1948. So you can imagine, that's pretty powerful. That the Chanukiah survived, right? And they wanted to put it in the museum. So Sandy, the person who really sort of founded the museum in Kfar Etzion, she was actually... story in and of itself, but not for now. She walks in one morning, and she, you know, the menorah, and there was a Shavuot Lumido, somebody wanted to clean the menorah because the Hanukkah was coming. Right? So she starts to clean out the menorah. And Sandy suddenly sees what she's doing. She says, what are you doing? She says, I'm cleaning out the menorah. She goes, you don't understand. That wax schmutz that's in there, that's what's left of the candles that they lit here the last time that they lit Hanukkah in 1948. And all of those people aren't with us. This is what we have of them. Don't clean out the schmutz. Truma Sadeshin, right? Powerful. So the Kohen cleaned the schmutz and prepared the wick. Okay. Why do we say La'alot Ner Tamid? And what's a Ner Tamid? All right? And one last question. Very interesting. What's missing from Parshas Tetzaveh? Most of you know this. Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu's name is nowhere in the Parsha. Now that's an interesting question. Why is Moshe Rabbeinu's name nowhere to be found in the Parsha? Why don't we... Now, the Balatur, Rav Avadi Yosef, by the way, has a cute little vort. Rav Avadi Yosef says, right, the Balaturim says, right, the Balaturim was Rav Yaakov Ibn Turim, who was the son of the Rush. He wrote the Torah, which the Shulchan Aruch is based, huge. And everybody studies the Torah, but not everybody says the Balaturim. The Balaturim says it like this. Lo iskir Moshe b'zeh ha-seder, right? Moshe's not mentioned in this Parsha. Everywhere else in the Chumash, you find Moshe's name, except for in this Parsha. Why? Because Moshe Rabbeinu and Chet HaEgel, and by the way, it's an easy Pasuk to remember, Perek Lamed Bet, Pasuk Lamed Bet. It's the heart of the matter, late, right? Because that's what you remember if you need to find it. Wipe me out from your book. If you're going to destroy the Jewish people, then wipe me out. A tzaddik says something, it's like a decree. It has to be partially fulfilled. So Hashem decided that in this parsha, Moshe's name is not going to be as a partial fulfillment of being wiped out of the name. Right? Okay. So Rav Avadi Yosef says, he says, Mechenina misifrecha, sefer kaf, the 20th kaf is 20, right? It's a gematria of 20. It's the 11th letter, right? The 20th book. Tetzaveh is the 20th parsha. So therefore, in this parsha, whatever. Right? Okay, the Vilna Gaon, by the way, says, anybody know why Davka Parshas Tetzaveh? Because Parshas Tetzaveh almost always falls on the week of Zayin Adar, which happened this week as well. This week was Zayin Adar Aleph. Most poskim say that the Yortzeit is kept in Adar Aleph, right? So therefore, this week was the Yortzeit of Moshe Rabbeinu, right? So how appropriate that so that's kind of funny. The Parsha, the week that he was Nifter, that he left the world, is the week that we have a Parsha where Moshe's left. He's not there. But the obvious question is, well, why this Parsha? What about Parsha Tetzaveh? Why did Hashem work this out this way? What is Parsha Tetzaveh? What is this here? Right? So the truth is, Lubavitcher Rebbe makes a good point. It's incorrect to say that Moshe is not in this Parsha. In fact, it's the opposite. Moshe is so in this Parsha, he's in this Parsha more than anybody else. Because how does the Parsha start? The Parsha starts, Ve'ata Tetzaveh. Who is Ata is Moshe. Okay? And if you look carefully, you will find this repeats itself, right? Another example, Ve'ata Hakrev Elecha Aron Achicha. Moshe in this, thank you very much. Moshe in this week, is Ata. Now, what's the difference between you and your name? Your name is not who you are. Your name is just a designation of who you are. In fact, the only one who doesn't need your name is you. Like, I don't call myself Benny. It's not a name I use naturally. I've been enjoying calling Rav Benny Davis. Rav Benny, it's nice. I get to say Rav Benny, right? But it's not a normal thing I would say. Because I don't need my name. Because I'm me. The you, the Ata, is the essence of who Moshe is. Which, of course, begs the question, well, what about this Parsha is the essence of Moshe Rabbeinu? Like, what is this? What's going on here? So the truth is, it's not difficult to figure out. What does this Parsha introduce? Last week, we read Parsha Chuma. I'm putting aside for a moment, is this before Chet Ha'egel, after Chet Ha'egel? That's a whole interesting discussion. Maybe we'll do that in Kitiza. But let's say for right now, just in terms of a topic that we have not encountered before. Last week was building the Mishkan. Now you have a Mishkan. What do you need? Big day kohanas here, right? What's really going on here? This is the first time we're introduced to Kohanim. This is the introduction to the concept of the kehuna. And this is what Moshe Rabbeinu says. Right? Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, beginning of Perek Chavchet, Ve'ata, you, hakrev elecha et aron achicha. Bring your brother. This is such a beautiful pasuk. The whole kahuna starts with being karov. And it's two brothers. And Moshe Rabbeinu is supposed to bring Aaron close. There's a depth of brotherhood in this parsha that people miss. The Kohen is supposed to be, the kahuna begins from literally within the Jewish people. Lechanoli, Aaron ben Nadav, Aaron Nadav, Avihu, Vavihu, Elazar, Vitamar, Bnei Aaron. So in this parsha, the kahuna is introduced. This is all about Aaron. Now you would think, Moshe Rabbeinu, he's the man. He comes down to Egypt, he's the Navi, he takes them out of Egypt, the 10 plagues, Har Sinai. He's going to lead them through the desert. And all of a sudden, he's left out. And yet, there is not a smidgen, there is not a remez in this parsha that Moshe Rabbeinu struggles with this question at all. In this parsha, Moshe says, this is not my parsha. I'm going to take a back seat. What a beautiful idea. Which makes sense. Because what is the essence of Moshe Rabbeinu? What is, if you had to pick the character trait that typifies Moshe Rabbeinu, he is the Anav. He's not just the Anav. Vayish Moshe Anav Me'od. Mikol Adam Asher Pnei Adama. Bechol Beiti Ne'emanu. There's no Anav that ever was or ever will be like Moshe Rabbeinu. What does it mean to be an Anav? To be an Anav means that you understand that you're a vehicle, you're a kli, you're a vessel. You know why the menorah is not mentioned? Why the menorah is not mentioned here? Menorah is this big grandiose thing, but it's just a vessel. The point is not the menorah. The point is the light. We get all caught up in the menorah. We, you and I, we're the menorah. We're supposed to be a vessel for light. And sometimes we get too full of ourselves. It's all about the menorah. What's my title? What's my job? How much am I earning? Do I have a bigger house? Did I get a better degree? What are you studying? Are you a menorah or are you a vehicle for light? And in this parasha, Moshe Rabbeinu takes a step back because it's not about him. It's about something that's so much bigger than him. Right? Now, what's fascinating about this is there are two primary roles in Judaism. There is the Kohen and there is the Navi. Now, the truth is there are four roles. There's also the Melech and the Shofet, right? El Shofet Asheyeh Bayamim Ahem. But Melech and Shofet are barely mentioned in the Torah. Melech comes up as a concept in Parsha Kitavo, you know, Kitavo El Aretz, right? The Torah, which is before Eretz Yisrael, does not talk much about Malchus. And the Shofet also. You know, Dayanim, judges, V'nigash El Elohim. But the mainstays, and who's the head of the Beis Din, is Moshe Rabbeinu, and that's the Navi. So the two main roles are the Navi and the Kohen. Now, what's the difference between a Navi and a Kohen? This is interesting. So, the Navi, and there are a lot of authors who write about this. This Fasemus talks about. Rabbi Sachs has some magnificent articles on this topic. The Navi is a person of drama. He takes the world by storm. He's Eliyahu HaNavi, yelling at the people in Har HaKarmel, Ad matay atem poschim al shnei ha'sifim? If I asked you to quote something from Moshe Rabbeinu, I'll bet you half of the Tzibur could come up with the least pasuk a quote from Moshe Rabbeinu. But Aaron doesn't talk much. Aaron is much quieter, you know? The Navi, he was unafraid to challenge the people and kings. He was the moral conscience of the nation. He challenges society. And he is a powerful influence on society. The prophets of the Jewish people have changed the world. Yirmiyahu HaNavi, Yishayahu HaNavi, right? The words of these prophets are carved on walls in the greatest capitals of the world. The Kohanim? I'll bet most people here can't come up with a name of more than one or two Kohen. Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol. You know, Aaron HaKohen, Nadav, Avihu, Elazar. We don't know the Kohanim's names. But Malachim, David, and Shaul, and Tzidkiyahu, and Yoshiyahu, and Yehoyachin. There's so many Malachim. But the Kohen's a quieter figure, right? He's apolitical. He's out of the spotlight. We are told to be a mamlechet kohanim, a kingdom of kohanim. We're going to see why in a second. We're never told to be a mamlechet nevi'im, to be a kingdom of prophets, right? In fact, it's interesting. In Bamidbar, in Balok, I think, right? There's a famous story of Eldad and Medad. That's a fascinating topic. Eldad, Medad, from the Dad, to the Dad. We're going to talk about that some other time. But these two individuals weren't picked, right? There were supposed to be 70 elders. They drew lots, six tribes, time, so it ends up 72. So there's two extra. They stay back in the camp. And they're not supposed to be in the camp. They're Nevi'im. They're supposed to be with Moshe. They're supposed to get it from Moshe. They're just doing their thing. And Yeshua gets very upset. And Rabbi Moshe, Klaim, lock them up. What are we going to do with them? And Moshe Rabbeinu says, Umi Yitain, Kolam Hashem Nevi'im. Like, would that everybody could be a Navi. Ki Yitain Etayim Et Rucho Aleyim. That the spirit, right? The nevuah comes to a person because of who he is, not by birth, right? But we're not all supposed to be nevi'im. They're very rare nevi'im. Now, the Navi is very different from the Kohen in a lot of other ways. The Kohen is a dynasty. It's inherited from father to son, which can create certain problems. But the Navi, nevuah is a meritocracy. In fact, Moshe's sons do not inherit his position. Yeshua does, right? Each Navi had a unique and powerful personality. The Kohanim wasn't about their personality. It's actually not about who you are. It's about what you do, right? There's no uniform for a Navi. If you walked by a Navi in the time, he looked like everybody else. you wouldn't even know he was a Navi. But a Kohen? If a Kohen has one tear in his clothing, a whole parasha we're going to talk about his clothing. The Kohen was isolated. He was in the Beis HaMikdash. He was separate from the people. He was a model from afar. The Navi was Mitocham. He was amongst the people, right? He was a shepherd. Moshe was a shepherd. David was a shepherd, right? He was a farmer. Elisha was a farmer. They worked. And when they weren't in a moment of Nevuah, they were working like everybody else. They weren't constantly Nevi'im, right? The Navi is all about the spoken word. And the Kohen is all about silent ritual. In fact, when you go to meet the Kohen, you're the one who's talking. Right? Beginning of Parashat Ki Tavo, you say the whole thing of Bikurim, that's what you say. He just accepts the Bikurim. Right? There were all sorts of restrictions on a Kohen. Who he could marry, what he could do. The Kohen was all about ritual and structure. Every minute of every day, of every Mishmeret, what time you wake up in the morning, and where you go, and what you do, and what you wear, and what you think, and how to make sure you don't touch anything that's wrong. The Navi was all about spontaneity, about making it meaningful. There was no ritual to Nevuah. The words of the Navi and the words of the Kohen are very different. The Kohen's words are Kodesh and Chol, Tamei and Tahor. The words of the Navi, Tzedek u'Mishpat, Chesed u'Rachamim. The Kohen was about creating a ritual of habits that we could live by day. And the Navi was about making it meaningful, about changing the way we think. And I'll tell you something else. Rav Soloveitchik has a magnificent article, and we don't have time to get into it. I'll give you 1 minute for it, in which he defines the two primary roles in Jewish leadership. Some of us have talked about this before in Q&As. And these are the Rav and the Rebbe. Now, who was the primary Rav of the Jewish people? Moshe Rabbeinu. Who was the primary Rebbe? Aaron. The Rav, Moshe Rabbeinu, is up on Mount Sinai. He's up on our scene. He's talking to God. He's so high, you can't even see him. He's hidden in the clouds. And when he comes down, you can't look at his face. He has to leave the Machaneh. He has to be in a tent outside the camp. The Rebbe, he's not up on Har Sinai. Aaron is down below. He's in the schmutz, in the middle of Chet HaEgel with the rest of us. And while you can't look at Moshe Rabbeinu, Aaron is coming up next to you to give you a hug. He's the Oev Shalom and the Rodev Shalom. Now, what's the fundamental difference between the Rav and the Rebbe? The Rav is the Isha Halacha. He's a man of intellect. The Rebbe is the Isha Neshama. He's a man of the soul. The Rav is the person you go to when you're not sure halachically if you can do business with someone. The Rebbe is the guy you go to when you want to make up with your business partner and you're not sure how to do it. The Rav is the one who tells you whether meat is kosher. The Rebbe is the one who tells you whether you're kosher. Now, obviously, every Rav, you like that line? Obviously, every Rav has to be a little Rebbe, and every Rebbe has to be a little Rav. I'll tell you something interesting. And I learned this the hard way. We're recruiting for a Raita. Lots of people have a Rav. Most people don't have a Rebbe. If you're not sure it's Shemitah year, and you're not sure whether you can eat or what to do, there's a bunch of people you call the rabbi, you show. If you can't get him, you call the rabbi the next show. You can't get him, you call the rabbi from the yeshiva you were that you haven't been in touch with, or you go online, you look at the Bar-Ilan computer. You can figure it out. But if you need a rebbe, if you're broken because your girlfriend dumped you, right, because you were learning the wrong masechta, or you're suffering, or you had a tragedy, that's the rebbe. It's unbelievable how many Jews in the world today have no rebbe. It is the biggest challenge facing the Jewish people. I actually think it's one of the most important goals of this yeshiva, that a boy should leave here with a Rebbe. Not because we need to be Rebbeim, because we all need to have Rebbeim. It is one of the painful aspects of my life that I've lost most of my Rebbeim. Rav Lichtenstein's not with us anymore. His Torah is with us. Rav Amital's not with us anymore. Rav Riskin's getting old. It's very difficult for me. I don't have a person who can be my Rebbe. Very difficult. Don't miss that opportunity to make of someone your Rebbe. Right? And this parsha starts with Torah. You have to bring the Torah to Moshe, because that's what Or is. Kiner mitzvah v'Torah. Oh, Torah is all about light, and light is all about Torah. You have to bring the Torah to Moshe Rabbeinu because we need a leadership of Torah. It's something we're missing today, right? But it's the Kohen who will spread the light. Mitoch HaNeshama. And the goal is l'ha'alot ner tamid. That when we kindle that light, that eventually that light, right? Rav Shimshon Falhirsch talks about this, becomes self-sufficient. In fact, Halacha says that the Kohen, when he lights the, you know, when he lights the wick, he has to keep his hand there. You ever light a candle and it's not quite lit yet, and then you see the light comes up and you can, you have to light the candle and wait until the light can stand on its own. That's exactly how Torah works. You know, one day next year, when all of you are here Shana Bet, and you have a younger Shana Al Chavrusa, and you want to show him how he can learn on his own, and you got to stick with him until he's ready to learn on his own, right? It has to be a ner tamid. Torah can't be something that just happens at 5 minutes in the morning. It has to be something that lightens up your life all the time. It has to be the lens through which you illuminate the world. That's what Torah is about. And I'll finish with one last piece. This is a pasuk in Malachi. Pasuk in Malachi. Malachi was a Navi who lived towards the end of Beit Rishon. And he is castigating the Jewish people. He's one of the Treasar, the 12 prophets that most people don't get to. And he's castigating the Jewish people. And one of the things he's saying is, you're Kohanim. Look how you have no Kohanim, you have no Navi. What's going on? And he says, what's a Kohen supposed to be? He says, Torat emet hayta b'fiyu. He was supposed to have true Torah coming out of his mouth. V'yavla lo nimtza b'sfatav. And warped speech would never come out of his mouth. B'shalom uv'mishor alachiti. He walked with me, says Hashem, through the Navi in peace. V'rabi meshiv me'avon. And many did he bring back from iniquity. Not the Navi, the Kohen. Because the lips of the Kohen will safeguard dat, knowledge. And Torah will they ask him. And the Radak says here, ubimisho, what does that mean? That he walked on a flepes? Shehalach b'darkei bnei adam b'derech yishara. He was b'derech yishara, the same derech yishara of the Rambam. He was a healthy, balanced, ethical role model. It's not about how much shas he knew. It's not whether he knows how to make a cup of tea according to the Shita Shireim and Yatso Lettuce Bow. It's whether he understood how to behave. And Rashi here says, V'chein b'maaseh ha'egel, heshivu kol shivtechem me'avon, sh'ne'emar v'yasfu elav kol b'nei Levi. What was Aaron doing down below? Moshe Rabbeinu was up there, he was studying shas. Aaron was down there trying to help the people prevent them from making the biggest mistake in their life. Alechem mutal lishmor dat. Now, what does that mean, lishmor dat? So we know this. What is dat? Dat is knowledge. And knowledge is all about relationship. What relationship are we talking about? Our relationship with Hashem. It's the Kohen who succeeds in bringing us to our relationship with Hashem. He models it. He shares it. He struggles with it. Why are we called a Mamlechet Kohanim? We're called a Mamlechet Kohanim because that's our role in the world. Our role in the world is to be a vehicle for the world to understand how to develop a relationship with Hashem. Because you can't have an objective ethic if you don't have a relationship with Hashem. This is what we're going through now in the world. There's an entire portion of the world that have lost their compass. They are off the reservation. They're completely headed in the wrong direction. You know, you have people, I was talking to somebody today who told me that there was an article in the New York Times that the UN has been tasked, right, the United Nebuchs, has been tasked, what are you going to do? Has been tasked with investigating reports that Israeli soldiers are raping Arab women in the Gaza camps. How absurd is that? It's unbelievable, the sheker, the complete falsehood that you can put out there. This is like the new Shita. You know, somebody accused you. This friend of mine was telling me. Somebody accused you of something. What do you do now? You just accuse them of the same thing. And then it all gets muddy. No matter how ridiculous it is. What happened to tzedek? What happened to mishpat? What happened to chesed? It's unbelievable. For the first time this week, in 20 days, in 3 weeks, humanitarian trucks entered northern Gaza with sacks of flour. Why did it take 3 weeks? because Hamasnikim were stopping the trucks. When they finally conquered Chativat Chan Yunis, they finally took over, they finally broke that brigade, so the trucks could get through and get to the people that they were meant for. And we just we assume, of course, we're going to put in humanitarian aid trucks. Now, I'm not talking about that whole debate. That's a legitimate debate. That's what an army does. You're not there to destroy a people. You're there to destroy an organization. How do we find that balance? That's what it means to be a Melechet Kohanim. And this is the beginning of that journey. We got the Torah. What do we do with it? How do we share it? Does it make a difference in the world? Now, we are blessed. We're blessed for this year, maybe for next year, but certainly for this year, to be here sitting and learning Torah in the old city of Yerushalayim. Generations of Jews dreamed. They dreamed about what we're going to do. I'm going to take you up on Masada tomorrow, some of you. It's mind-boggling to think where we are and where they were. What did we do with that experience? How does it change us? Do we take advantage of it? Do we grab those extra 5 minutes in the Beit Midrash, that extra piece of chesed we can do in the Rova Square, whatever it might be? That's our challenge. So that's a little bit of food for thought on the perfect. It's over.